It's where you go to bike, hike, and stroll miles of pathways over more than 7,000 acres of parkland. A place to go explore rivers and fish their bountiful waters. Natural places to go marvel at magnificent wildlife while you play outdoors and go wander charming communities. Find all this and more at Destination Downriver. Give it a go.
Today's podcast is presented by MarketInsights.us. With the podcast on YouTube, produced by the City of Taylor's Media Center. Thank you for the generous support of our community sponsor. When your destination is beyond downriver, let Martinson Family of Funeral Homes help you and your family. With locations in Trenton, Allen Park, Mabee, Rockwood, and Monroe, their staff is available 24/7 at 734-671-5400. For more information, visit martinson.com.
Thank you to our team sponsor, Allegra, Marketing, Print, and Design. Let Allegra assist you with your print, mail, design, and signs. Located in Wyandotte, Michigan, or call 734-284-5330.
Welcome to another episode of Destination Downriver. I'm your host, Carl Zimak. Today's topic is investing in downriver and fostering community growth. Companies that invest in our downriver communities contribute to the overall economic growth of our entire region. A thriving local economy benefits both business and communities at large. In today's interconnected world, businesses have the extraordinary opportunity to profoundly influence the communities they serve. Beyond making profits, they are crucial to nurturing a thriving, dynamic downriver. Good investment broadens the region and creates partnerships that amplify their impact. Our first guest joining us today is Chris Girdwood, who leads the Detroit Region Aerotropolis Development Corporation. Aerotropolis is a four-community, two-county, public-private economic development partnership. It drives corporate expansion and new investment around Detroit Metro and Willow Run airports. Our second downriver investor is Ron Thomas, founder and president of Rise Above Ventures, headquartered in Wyandotte. RAV is a real estate development firm offering a portfolio of services that include construction, brokerage, and management services to transform and revive underperforming real estate. Up next, investing in downriver and fostering community growth. We'll be back with Chris Girdwood of the Detroit Regional Aerotropolis in one moment. We're back here in our first discussion with Chris Girdwood of the Detroit Region Aerotropolis. Chris, I understand the concept of the Aerotropolis in general was popularized by a professor, I believe it is, John Casarda, over 20 years ago, when he predicted that areas close to airports were ideally positioned to have faster economic development than other regions. His general theory was that that was the fastest form of transportation, and it tends to fuel, forgive the pun, development of the surrounding cities. Mm-hmm. Is that the concept here?
Sure is, exactly
okay.
Right.
All right, give us a quick view for people out there who have no idea what the Detroit Region Aerotropolis does. Yes. Give us a quick view of what your visions are, what the mission is, and how you're moving.
I appreciate it. Thanks for the question, and thanks for having me. The Aerotropolis region is a economic development partnership between Washtenaw County, Wayne County, and the four communities surrounding DTW and Willow Run, or Detroit Metropolitan Airport, mm-hmm. and Willow Run Airport. And the interesting thing about how DTW and Willow Run grew up through the years is that the communities held on to their agricultural or agrarian roots for quite some time. Mm-hmm. But as you could see, in the last 5 years, about 4,000 to 5,000 acres of undeveloped land has changed hands, and it's now being put into productive use. And that productive use is for commercial activity to support airport operations, but also for residential uses as well. And so you're seeing a nice live, work, play community established around the airport region. And with noise abatement coming along, quite a far way, we don't have the impact from noise that you used to have. And so folks looking to buy an affordable house in an area where jobs are being created can do that here in this region.
Interesting. Very, very interesting. You have an interesting background yourself. Okay. How long have you been with leading the Aerotropolis?
5 years.
Okay. God, that's gone fast.
It has.
But you have an interesting background, both professionally, educationally. Can you give us a peek into that? You've even registered patents, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. So I'm Michigan born and raised, but I left for 11 years. I went to Los Angeles and Washington, D.C., in my 30s and came back. In my 40s, I have four children. And so my wife and I moved back home to raise our kids here in Michigan. I had a great childhood in a city similar to the city of Taylor. And so we want that for our kids. Professionally, I've been in economic development for 15 years and always had a keen interest on innovation and how new technologies can emerge and transform the way we do things. And I like the fact that here in Aerotropolis, you've got great access to public institutions, whether it be your public schools or the University of Michigan, Wayne State, Eastern Michigan University, and even Michigan State up the road. And transferring that nascent technology into something that businesses can use to improve the bottom line and create new jobs is something we're just very interested in. And you're starting to see that here in Aerotropolis.
What's the biggest hurdle?
I think the biggest hurdle is getting an understanding of how all modes of mobility can work together. And what I mean by that is we have a considerable amount of grade separations here where you have rail and road meeting. And to separate the two to create new mobility, whether it's taking the road above the rail line or below the rail line or even utilizing low altitude airspace to move high value cargo, meaning why put a 5-pound part on a 2-ton truck and drive it to its destination? Why not put that 5-pound part on a 40-pound drone and fly it? And we're starting to really understand unique ways to utilize low altitude airspace in conjunction with high altitude airspace, and then really identifying bottlenecks where grade separation can help us move very efficiently here downriver.
Interesting. Aerotropolis offers the premier locale for greenfield expansion in Southeast Michigan. For those of us not real estate savvy, what greenfield expansion is, and aside from proximity to these major airports, what other advantages to that type of issue come into play?
Yeah, so a lot of us here in Michigan are always focused on the environment and ecology. We want to make sure that our forests, our waterways, our streams, our Great Lakes are healthy and, you know, are available to our children's and our children's children. And so here in the Aerotropolis, for example, you've got a great 68-acre site here in the city of Taylor that's being developed into a 500,000 square foot light industrial complex that will house hundreds of jobs. Mm-hmm. But with that, you've got on-site stormwater retention, pocket parks, berming with great landscaping. And so I think you can do both. You can have great commercial, residential, industrial activity with maintaining the ecological and environment that us Michiganders want to have, those green spaces. And so I think you're seeing that downriver, we're leading the way in that, where you can both have the job creation and the quality environment on the same piece of property. We're not just, you know, taking that greenfield space and demolishing it, we're preserving portions of it to make sure that we can live, work, play in this neighborhood.
Now, I think you were describing the newest proposal, CMAQ, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, so CMAQ is another one. I was referring to Metro 94.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure which one you were referring to. Okay.
There's multiple opportunities.
Both of them, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, here in the city of Taylor, you're going to see hundreds of jobs created in the near term. And I think that gives a lot of credit to the community that lives here and understanding that there's a public process involved with developing land, and they've been very supportive in creating jobs for the local residents here.
Now, two very different parcels there. One contaminated.
That's
okay,
right.
Historically, and with the developer, I believe, is Ashley Capital.
That's right.
And then CMAQ, on the other hand, that is, I don't believe, is a contaminated project.
It's not.
different handles. What's the biggest issue there? I mean, it seems to me like with Ashley Capital, the biggest issue is that they've been in that type of site before, over and over and over again. They've proven what they can do with it, and that's what they're going to pull off here. And with CMAQ, it's a little bit different. They are really moving fast to develop all over the region.
Yeah, so let's take the first project, mm-hmm. Metro 94 Commerce Center. Anytime you get a developer who develops in Georgia, Illinois, New York, around the United States, coming to your city and investing tens of millions of dollars, not only to remediate, but to cap and then build Class A light industrial space, mm-hmm. you're doing something right. And they're going to take a 68-acre parcel and they're going to activate it. And those jobs will be dedicated to the residents of the city of Taylor and the neighboring Aerotropolis communities. It's a great story. Mm-hmm. CMAQ services the automotive industry, the aerospace industry, and others. And you know, they've had an opportunity to look elsewhere as well. I think one of their biggest clients is in the Carolinas. And mm-hmm. The city of Taylor and the Aerotropolis board members started to work very closely with CMAQ to help them build in the city of Taylor and not in the Carolinas, because developers have a chance to go where they find the best, you know, workforce, where they find the most amenable city leadership to their development. And the city of Taylor's really stepped up and made this a very favorable environment to create jobs.
Yeah, I know the mayor actually sits on your board.
He
correct?
Does. Yeah.
That's got to be handy in being able to translate your message directly to the community.
It's great. And so my board is made up of 10 individuals, and it's the mayors, the supervisors, individuals from the county executive's office, the Michigan Economic Development Corporation, and the Airport Authority. And it's a think tank. Every time we get together and we review these large projects, you would be so surprised how supportive mayors and supervisors are of the neighboring communities. In economic development, we set out to eliminate what's referred to as the zero-sum game, mm-hmm. meaning we don't want to move jobs from one city to a neighboring city because no new jobs were created. You lost jobs in one and you created jobs in another city, but it's a zero sum when you add them together. Mm-hmm. What we want to do is we want to compete nationally for these jobs. Mm-hmm. Fortune 500 corporations who are looking to invest to create technology of the future. And I think Aerotropolis, we've done a good job of saying, hey, we've got available land, we've got good access to mobility, and we've got a group that's working together as a region. Mm-hmm. And so we've been very successful, and I think we will be in the near and in the long term as well.
I know in another life, in another job that I had a chance to sit down a long time ago with now Mayor Duggan, mm-hmm. okay, who was then Ed McNamara's bulldog on his staff. And we talked ring road development. And then years later, when Bob Ficano took over, had another very similar discussion with him. How is that really progressing? And is that really the focus anymore? Or is it more, or is it greater than that, I guess?
Yeah, I think what we do when it comes to road development is it becomes hyper-local within the Aerotropolis communities. And as of recent, we've been studying E-Course Road. Mm-hmm. E-Course Road links Van Buren Township, Romulus, and the city of Taylor with other communities as well. But we're looking at that corridor as a gateway into moving high-value cargo from both Willow Run and DTW to its destination in a very seamless way, mm-hmm. without impacts to residential neighborhoods. And you know, when the high-value cargo gets flown in from wherever in the world to service the OEMs, we want to make sure that, you know, the OEMs are putting their production lines and their final assembly here in the Aerotropolis region. So we're studying how E-Course Road can be the future of not only light industry, but also distribution, logistics, final assembly, you know, to the aerospace and the automotive sectors. And so, not so much focused on the ring road, but hyper-focused on E-Course Road, Inkster Road, and a few others that we think will be job create. Well, the land adjacent to those roads will be significant job creators in the future.
Is it tough to go like you were? I watched you in front of Taylor City Council.
Yeah.
Is it tough to go in front of council people and try to get them on board in a relatively snappy fashion, okay, when, quite frankly, it struck me like many of them are just kind of gazing at you going, you're talking here, and they're like over here somewhere.
Not at all. Not at all. Mm-hmm. It's part of the job that I enjoy. I think the city council and having the elected officials asking, you know, very poignant questions about mm-hmm. the work you're doing is a good thing. Mm-hmm. And I think as Aerotropolis is funded by the communities that it serves, I think it's so important to have that feedback loop or that mechanism for mm-hmm. local elected officials to dig deep and understand what economic development is and how sometimes there's a long cycle to economic development. We may be working with a company who has five pieces of land mm-hmm. all over the United States they're considering. And then a year later, they hone down on one piece, and then we go through the zoning piece, and then we mm-hmm. go through developing infrastructure, whether it's road, water, sewer, fiber, and then understanding whether or not economic development tools like tax increment financing need to be put in place. And some of these projects take 5 years to get across the finish line. Mm-hmm. And I think every time we get in front of city council or local elected officials, we always focus on that message that we're playing the long game. Mm-hmm. There may be short-term wins, but by far, these are long-term projects, but once you land them, they have long-term benefits.
I know that recent discussion surrounding CMAQ, you were really advocating kind of a one-stop shopping with Aerotropolis that under Mayor Woolley and with your cooperation, you're really blossoming as far as Taylor's participation, because whether they had known that they could go that far with Aerotropolis, but you've got your attorneys involved and, mm-hmm. and all of those things. I would assume that for consistency's sake, given the fact that development takes so long, that's a really big advantage.
It is. It's one of the mm-hmm. core advantages that Aerotropolis offers. Aerotropolis, from a legal standpoint, is a state mm-hmm. government entity. Mm-hmm. And so we've got unique tools embodied by the Michigan legislature to help with economic development. And so I'll give you an example. When it comes to public infrastructure improvements, whether it's road, water, or sewer, Aerotropolis has the unique ability to raise funds through tax increment financing to assist the city in making large infrastructure projects happen. And then when you take a look at what we refer to as the funnel of economic development, I submit City of Taylor properties to about 70 or 80 active projects a year. Of those 80 projects, we get a second look on maybe 10. And then of those 10 projects, we get a third look on 3 or 4. And that's the funnel. And then of those 3 or 4 projects, we land one potentially a year. And so, but each of those projects are within the tens of millions of dollars in capital investment. And so I think with the city's partnership, I'm always trying to keep them in the loop on the projects I'm submitting to and the mm-hmm. sites and buildings that can be activated. Mm-hmm. And then we work very closely with planning and zoning to make sure there's a good fit within the community for the project when it comes. But, you know, by and far, you know, we've got about a 1-3% win rate, and I'm okay with that. It's mm-hmm. These are big projects. There's a lot of moving pieces. And if we can bring in $150 to $100 million project a year, I think we're doing okay.
You know, you've given us a pretty good update on where CMAQ is and recently. Where is the Metro 94 right now? Because there were a lot of pieces there. There's the interchange, there's the upgrades to get to the interchange, there's the property itself, which yeah. isn't just you walk on, you clear it, and boom, it pops up.
Yeah.
You know, they've been probably spending all this time on footings and things like that.
Yeah, they're referred to as geopiers, mm-hmm. and they've had to put in hundreds and hundreds of geopiers to stabilize the foundation to get the over 500,000 square foot building to settle appropriately on that piece of land, given there was some remediation that was required, but also capping that was required from a brownfield standpoint. And brownfield means that, you know, there was an unlicensed landfill on the site. And anytime the city takes a look at a piece of property, cleaning it is always the best way to go. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what the city's leadership and Ashley Capital are doing right now. But in that process, as they go through the geo-peering and stabilizing the foundation, you're absolutely right. where now comes the time where that property will be activated, there'll be a roof on it, and they'll have columns to really start looking at tenants. Mm-hmm. Who will be the end user? Mm-hmm. Will it be a Fortune 500 company that will be looking to take advantage of the two great airports, the freeways here in the city of Taylor? And that's where I think the city and I really work together, is identifying who that tenant will be and then making sure that tenant can find a place where their employees live, work, and play here in the city of Taylor. And mm-hmm. I think, you know, it's a big win up front to get those tens of millions of dollars of capital investment onto that 68-acre parcel. Mm-hmm. But now it's coming to finding the right tenant and making sure they're a good fit for the city of Taylor.
That all makes sense. Chris, where do you see Aerotropolis in a decade?
In 10 years, I think we will have activated more of the mobility infrastructure capabilities here. Meaning, I think Detroit Metro Airport and Willow Run will be utilizing low altitude airspace in addition to the high altitude airspace that they currently utilize. And what I see is, you know, air taxis and the Jetsons, sure, but for the most part, I think industrial and light industrial high value cargo will be moved through low altitude airspace, meaning you can have a 3D printing or additive manufacturing operation that can 3D print mixed metal parts for final assembly in one area and fly those parts to the, you know, line for one of the OEMs, whether it's aerospace or automotive, within 45 minutes. And so alleviating congestion on the ground through vehicular traffic and utilizing low altitude airspace, but also we look at bringing jobs back that had left. And so a lot of the manufacturing prowess in Southeast Asia was not additive manufactured, it was subtractive manufacturing. And so I think additive manufacturing and 3D printing is going to change the way both the automotive and aerospace industry makes parts and utilizes their supply chain in a new way. And I think that can be hyper-local, meaning I think that your supply chain can be within 30, 40, 50 minutes mm-hmm. because 3D printing will allow you to do things on demand. Mm-hmm. So if an automotive client or an aerospace client said, hey, we need to rework the way this part fits into the final assembly, they can go back to that 3D printer, they can put in whatever modifications need to be made, and then they can fly that part through low altitude airspace to get it there within no time. And then we look at our road network, and I think that we're going to continue to maintain our road, water, and sewer infrastructure. And I think that in the next 10 years, the downriver community, specifically in the city of Taylor, is going to see some significant investment, you know, into public infrastructure, because the affordability of the housing here is one of its greatest assets. For a young family looking to buy a house between $150,000 and $250,000, this is the community you're going to do it, and they're going to raise their kids here. And I think that you're going to see economic growth because those families will repopulate many of the public schools here in the city of Taylor. And within the tax rate that's going to be generated, I think the city is so wise currently to make those public infrastructure investments for those families that are moving here.
Do you see Aerotropolis as everything that you just talked about kind of moves into play, okay? Do you see Aerotropolis actually expanding?
That's a great question. Yeah, I think it will. Okay. I think Aerotropolis will. We've seen some interest in Washtenaw County, in the eastern communities in Washtenaw County, Ypsilanti, mm-hmm. Ypsilanti Township, mm-hmm. and a few others, and rightfully so, because it brings together such a unique talent pool where you have, you know, the arsenal of democracy, you've got the Detroit labor force that put the world on wheels, and then you've got the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor, Eastern Michigan University, that, you know, have these incredible research faculty that are putting out new technologies, and I think it's on us to commercialize those technologies within, you know, the industries we see ourselves fitting into in the future. And I think it's aerospace. I think we will pivot into the aerospace industry, and we've got the workforce to do it because the skills in automotive are transferable to the aerospace industry. And I think we've got new technologies coming online that we can harness. And we've got real estate coming online where we can put folks to work in brand new light industrial buildings. So I'm very bullish on this area.
Given where we're located, Canada, is that a possibility?
Absolutely. And okay. So the Gordie Howe Bridge is essential to ensuring that aerospace and automotive industries thrive. And so, you know, when you take a look at some of the ways demand is calculated for both auto and aerospace, Canada is very much a part of that. And so to service the Canadian market, we often have to come through Detroit and the Aerotropolis region. And so we're very excited about the Gordie Howe Bridge and how that's going to transform the manufacturing workforce, but also the logistics that goes along with you know, the Canadian market and how close they are to us.
Fantastic. Hey, thanks. Thank you for coming on. This was really, really interesting. Hopefully we may come back next year and come back with you on another show.
Absolutely. Be happy to come back.
Great.
Thanks.
All right. We are back on Downriver, on Destination Downriver, with Ron Thomas of Rise Above Ventures. Ron is the founder and president of, is it RAV or RAV?
RAV.
RAV, yep. Okay, which is headquartered in Wyandotte. RAV is a, RAV is a real estate development firm offering a portfolio of services that include construction, brokerage, management services to transform and revive underperforming real estate into new best use opportunities. Ron, it's great to have you here.
Great to be here, Carl.
As we were going over beforehand, this is the second segment of two. We spoke with Chris Gerwood of the Detroit region, Aerotropolis, getting more private here and getting closer to the river, I think, with you.
Sure.
But before we go really into RAV, I got to ask you, you career entrepreneur, but as you started this business, I've been told it was kind of an offshoot of your BMX riding. Tell us about your BMX riding and some of your history.
Yeah, so I grew up in Wyandotte, and I moved away for about a decade between now, and then I moved back to this area in 2010. Mm-hmm. But when I left, it was to pursue a career in bike riding. It was a childhood passion of mine, like X Games type stuff, BMX stunt riding. Yeah. So I moved to North Carolina because it was a hotbed of those activities then. Soon after I got there, like a week after I got there, I got a job performing. So I would travel around the country, like in a Suburban with three other guys doing, you know, backflips on mobile ramps for people. I made a whopping $100 a day, like $7,000 a year gross, because most of the days you weren't working. Mm-hmm. And that was how my career started. Okay. And that's actually the Rise Above part of the name of our company today is just a legacy from that. It was a slogan from a bike rider I looked up to back when.
Well, since we're on Destination Downriver and you're a Wyandotte guy,
yeah,
tell us about you growing up in Wyandotte. Did you go to Roosevelt?
What schools
did you go to, and what'd you do?
I went to elementary school, and we're gonna end up probably talking about this a little bit more later, but at McKinley Elementary in Taft, and then I graduated high school from Roosevelt.
Okay, yeah. Yep. Already. And when'd you graduate?
02.
02, already. Yep. Now, being a BMX rider, were you an athlete in school?
Or? Well, back then, BMX wasn't really considered athletics. You know, okay. These days it's in the Olympics.
Right.
So I would say yes, but I was an athlete in that sport, which then was more of like a fringe activity, and today is more a legitimate sport.
Other than the name,
yeah.
What else transformed from BMX riding to real estate development?
Value set, risk mitigation, things like that. I mean, if you're doing extreme sports for a living, as I was, it gives you a perspective on risk and risk mitigation and thinking on your feet and all these things that might not be obvious to the outsider, but if you can survive that sport, then you can go pretty much anywhere and then be, you know, at least okay.
That's fantastic. Yeah. That is really cool. Now, RAV, been steadily changing the landscape in cities like Wyandotte, Trenton. A great example of what your company is doing might be the former City Hall building.
Sure.
Okay, that sat empty for over a decade. Mm-hmm. Tell us about what you look for in space that you're interested in.
Great question. I started investing in real estate, as I think many people did, through the recession and, you know, buy a foreclosed house, fix it up, make it nicer, and then sell it to somebody or rent it. Mm-hmm. But I soon realized that we could pick you can make a living doing many things. And if we're going to put our resources and our energy towards something, maybe we can do something that will change a community for the better. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of became our mantra and the kind of project we looked for. So today, we don't do any of what I talked about a minute ago, which is, you know, fix up like houses. Mm-hmm. Instead, we look for things that are problem properties for local communities, many of which are in Wyandotte, but some other surrounding areas, or challenging properties that are causing, you know, issues but could be something special. Mm-hmm. And we start there. Mm-hmm. And then we try to put together the construction plan and the finance plan and everything else to take something and transform it into really an asset for the area.
When you talk about the space in those terms, the first thing that comes to my mind is old to new. Is that accurate, or am I oversimplifying?
No, I think that's fair, but a certain kind of old. Because some old should just probably not exist anymore and be turned into land and then something
else, right?
But uh-huh. Some old is worthy and you know should be kept and salvaged and rebuilt.
Mm-hmm. I know in Wyandotte especially, and since you grew up there and are now doing this there, there has always been a heavy lean toward the rehabbing the traditional historic mm-hmm. homes. I mean, if you go back through Jimmy DeSena, mm-hmm. you know, not James, but Jimmy, his dad, and what he was doing way back in the 80s, hanging into the 90s, where Wyandotte, instead of ripping down things, took pride in wraparound porches and things that are kind of going away in a mm-hmm. lot of communities. Did that influence you moving forward?
Not only did it influence me, a lot of the work that I do today is a product of decisions that were made way before me by folks like Jim DeSena then. Mm-hmm. And what they did that I think was intelligent and took mm-hmm. a while to see was, you know, they invested a lot of money in buying, like, for example, like dilapidated houses, ones that mm-hmm. shouldn't be saved, mm-hmm. and tore them down and then set the price of land low, but then put certain parameters around what could be built there okay. as a condition of buying it at mm-hmm. a discounted price. And now, 3 decades on, mm-hmm. what we have throughout our city is a bunch of nice new construction homes that have mm-hmm. something of a uniformity to them, but they're quality. Mm-hmm. And that only was possible because of, you know, forward thinking of, you know, mm-hmm. people before me. And yeah.
Is RAV much into residential, or is it mainly into larger multi-purpose buildings and business buildings?
If we do residential, it mm-hmm. tends to be like multi-family residential.
Okay.
But we don't focus on residential necessarily. Instead, mm-hmm. we focus on the type of project. Sometimes it's residential, mm-hmm. but that can transform an area. That can be, mm-hmm. you know, take something that's derelict and a liability for an area mm-hmm. and make it better.
For a young guy like yourself, coming off the BMX thing and all that stuff, how were you able to afford getting into this? Because I know there's a lot, when you talk about dilapidated buildings,
yeah.
even if you see and you're right about transforming them, there's yeah. a lot of money that's got to go in before you take a lot of money out.
Yeah. Well, first, you know, a project, I first look at something and actually, you know, I'll try to envision what its end use can mm-hmm. be, but I also very much look to the economics and the finance. I don't have a degree, but I do have some formal education that's in that area. Mm-hmm. And if I can't see the not only what the final product, like, you know, will look like physically, mm-hmm. but the financial path to get there, mm-hmm. then I'm not going to take it on. Mm-hmm. So how really, for me, it's been like, how do you eat an elephant one bite at a time? You know, I started by collectively my life savings was $13,000 back when I rode bikes. And I used my first investment in a business. And then with time, it snowballed and I just kept reinvesting and reinvesting. And now it's to the point where I can't just bootstrap the projects that we do. Mm-hmm. So there is a lot of public-private partnership. Mm-hmm. I have, you know, investors that I work with, that sort mm-hmm. of thing. I've learned to speak bank language over the years, and so I do a lot of work with banks too. But it's a lot of moving pieces, and that's probably mm-hmm. the most challenging part of my job, honestly.
Is it when you compare yourself to other developers, mm-hmm. okay, in this space, is it a real positive that you grew up in the area and that you have a little different vision?
I think a couple things. I don't really compare us to other developers often, but I will say that we're a small development company that tends to think like a big one, mm-hmm. But it's mm-hmm. also because we're young and early on, I think, mm-hmm. in the company's life cycle. But it, I think I get a certain level of credibility amongst my contemporaries and people in the neighborhoods that I work because I'm from there. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not some outside guy that came in that nobody knows that's doing mm-hmm. something. Instead, it's like, oh, I'm Ron. I grew up over on 4th Street, and everybody's like, oh, okay, you know, like 4th and Bonnie. yeah. So that helps for sure.
What about, can you give us an idea, kind of a quantitative look at the economic impact of some of your projects and how they're affecting these communities?
Of course. I'm not sure the best way to do that, but mm-hmm. I'll, you know, the properties that we've done probably 150,000 square foot of redevelopment of commercial space in Wyandotte in the last 4 years or so, mm-hmm. With another almost that much in the pipeline right now. And what that looks like most of the time is a tax base of zero or near zero, mm-hmm. a dilapidated building, nobody's using it, nobody's living there, to when it's done, you'll have, you know, with the tax base will increase by like $250,000 a year on that much property. So that's that much more money going into, right. not only the taxes, but then, like I'll give you an example of one building we did. It's 100 Maple, it's where the Vault restaurant is now. It was vacant mm-hmm. when we bought it. We redeveloped it over about 18 months, and now there's 25 or so businesses that operate out of an office space there, mm-hmm. Six residential units, and then the Vault restaurant. And it's mm-hmm. been, you know, a catalyst for redeveloping the block there, where now there's also an event venue called District 142. But it's hard to say the work that we've done. You know, these macroeconomic indicators are kind of hard to nail down exactly,
right.
but the impact's been dramatic. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. dozens and dozens of businesses, tons of restaurants, and all these mm-hmm. things and activity happen as a result of mm-hmm. Not the work I do, but the work that my team does in connection with the community.
Why not unique? I always thought it was. I came down here. I was a Dearborn native, okay, mm-hmm. and I eventually came down here in very late 1979. Took a job at the News Herald mm-hmm. and stayed there for 32 years, and I've been downriver ever since. And I always thought, given just the history of Wyandotte, the main street setting that's two blocks away from the water, all that stuff, that it is truly a unique setting. And yeah. is it a unique setting to develop in?
Yeah, I think so. The local economy is very much focused on hospitality, and mm-hmm. and that speaks to the fact that it's uniquely positioned and it has a nice downtown mm-hmm. along the waterfront. Mm-hmm. It's got a local government that's very pro-development and pro-business, mm-hmm. And a tight-knit group of like people that live and work there that want to see it advance. Mm-hmm. But also, you know, some attributes that can't be replicated by people, such as its geographic location. I think all these things add up to a special community, and you know, it's. Every community around here has its own ways of doing sure. things or attributes that are positive, but Wyandotte is, you know, a fun waterfront place that's, you know, doing well as a result, I think.
I can't help this because when I looked at your website, which is really kind of cool, and the developments, which are very impressive, okay.
Thank you.
The one that caught me, because I know the person, okay, is District 142. tell us a little about that building, because... we're doing this show out of Taylor, and
sure.
Julie Law has been one of our partners in Taylor,
okay.
doing our Summerfest and things like that. Yep. And I know Julie going way back 10, 12 years now, and just monitoring what's happened there has been stunning. And I'm curious from a development front,
yeah,
how'd that all take place?
Thank you for all those kind words. Mm-hmm. And I'm proud of that building too. I think it turned out great. So that building was vacant for maybe a decade, and it's two doors down from 100 Maple, which is the one I mentioned a minute ago. That block is right in the center of our town. And between those two buildings, it was, you know, 80% of the square foot on the block, and it had been all out of, like, vacant for a while. So I thought the same two buildings were owned by a mentor of mine, one guy. I didn't know him personally at the time. And I thought the 100 Maple was too much to take on, but the one 142, which became District 142, you know, that might have been, you know, I might have been able to do it. So I made him an offer for the 142 building and left the big one alone. Mm-hmm. And then he replied with a counter offer I couldn't refuse to do both of them. And I was like, this is the opportunity of a lifetime for me. And I'm going to probably pull my hair out 100 times till I get it done. But I saw it as a chance to revitalize a block in the center of the neighborhood that would then sort of just have an impact on the city, mm-hmm. you know, in a positive way. And I didn't have an end use in mind actually for District 142.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So we got to start on the other building first, And then Julie and her partner there, Josh Cade, approached me through Joe Gruber, who's our downtown development director. Yeah, mm-hmm. And he's tremendous. But he was really trying to push a deal to make something happen there. Mm-hmm. Julie operates events. They wanted a place to operate the events. That's how the conversation began. And I mean, I was just knowing Julie and Josh mm-hmm. and their business reputation and everything about them, I thought, yeah, anything I can do to help facilitate this, I will. Mm-hmm. So I sold them the building, and then we did the construction to turn it into what it is now.
And after all of that, you've been back when they, have you ever gone to an event there?
Yeah. Opening event, yeah.
Spectacular. Yeah. I mean, it seems like they're all spectacular. And they're all sold out. And granted, you know, I mean, we're not talking about Joe Louis Arena, yeah. Okay? But it's really, really, for me, I'm a 50s, 60s kid, cool. You know, it's just cool.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Well, and thank you. And that's the kind of, you know, when we talk about what I look for in a project, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. it's the potential to take something and make it really special, you know, mm-hmm. to mm-hmm. build something high quality that a lot of people are going to enjoy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, I haven't been there, but the vault has nothing but fabulous reviews. I mean, from the people that I know, and I, you know, being in Wyandotte for a while with the News Herald, yeah. I still know a lot of people around town, and they swear by that.
You know what? You know what these places have in common?
Huh?
Somebody way more capable than me manages them. They don't let me anywhere near that. do the business deal, do the construction, mm-hmm. and then just come back to have a beer every once in a while.
Exactly.
It runs great.
I hear you.
Yeah.
Okay. We bang the drum about Wyandotte there. You've also stepped up in Trenton, okay, which mm-hmm. is a little bit different than Wyandotte. How do you see downtown Trenton, and what's your feeling on what you've done there? Or what you plan to do there?
Downtown Trenton is, the communities are a little bit different. They're both hospitality-based. Wyandotte's more so. I think Wyandotte's more like populated and economically active in their downtown area, but Trenton is also, I think maybe to a little bit of a lesser degree, but my experience in Trenton's been good. I've done a couple projects there, not like Wyandotte, but yeah, it's a nice town. I like it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I warned you before the show, what's your favorite development or that you've done or that maybe you have planned?
We started about a month ago on redevelopment of McKinley School in Wyandotte. Coincidentally, I went there, which I mentioned earlier mm, yeah. in the podcast. But this is a building that was built in 1939 with federal dollars. It's a beautiful stone building. It's in the middle of a residential neighborhood, a nice residential neighborhood near downtown Wyandotte. And it's been vacant for 15 years, I think, and we're preserving it and turning it into an apartment building with some condos, 30 units total, and also there's an adjacent playground that the community has kind of adopted as a park that we're permanently deeding to the city and reinvesting in to make it a permanent park. Now, we're just getting started, but I think it's my favorite, yeah.
Oh, that's interesting because you've lived some time there.
Yeah.
So you probably... Yeah. have a lot of emotions invested in it.
When I walked through it, this is funny because I looked at it for a long time before I decided to move on it, and it was mm-hmm. because of a public-private partnership that it worked out. But walking through the building, it has these beautiful terrazzo floors, right, that like the day they're finished and polished up, I can't wait to see what they look like. But I'll walk into some of the classrooms and I have like memories of being there singing along mm-hmm. with the principal when I was in like third grade or whatever it was. But the building itself is just, it has, you know, a lot of like real nice stone features and things that you would just could not replicate today because of economics. And that's why I wanted to, you know, do my part to try to save
it. Well, that's cool. That is really cool. You know, when it comes to development, is Downriver a welcoming, easy place to develop? Or does it, you know, because it is a hodgepodge of a bunch of cities.
Yeah.
What do you see on that front?
I would say, governmentally, I think they're friendly mm-hmm. towards development. I think that's also part of a necessity, though, because economically it's difficult, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you don't, at the end of the day, you can't charge the rent that you would in, say, Traverse City or something. I don't do right. work there, mm-hmm. but you, the economics are a little bit trickier down here. Mm-hmm. But because of that, I think there's generally a pretty pro-business friendly environment for getting things done if you can manage to pull it off.
Anything that, as we head toward the finish line, anything that you can tell us as far as a preview goes besides the McKinley property, anything else out there that people should be looking for
What to do next?
Yeah.
You want me to just play my hand?
You can if you want. No. We'll welcome that. You don't necessarily have to give everything away.
No, we have a few active projects now. We're nearing the beginning start line of the redevelopment of the former City Hall building in Wyandotte, which we mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. We had just started this McKinley project. I view it as my responsibility to mm-hmm. see these things through to completion mm-hmm. before I jump into whatever the next big thing might be. Uh-huh. So, but I can tell you this, no matter what it is, it's going to be something that that will have a positive impact on the area. And that's, you know, really the litmus test for our
And that's the, hey, and that is the key thing that we're looking for, I know, on Destination Downriver and through the Chamber of Commerce and all that stuff. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thank you.
Really appreciate it. It's been a great conversation. We want to thank both Chris Gerwood of the Detroit Region Aerotropolis, Ron Thomas here of RAV, Rise Above Ventures, for coming on. It is organizations like this who make our community better and better and better, whether it really comes down to, it could be any of the 17 communities of the Downriver region. We're done for today. Stay in tune. Ron, if people want to track some of your stuff, what's your website?
Riseaboveventures.com.
Okay, just that simple.
Right? Just that simple.
Okay, yeah. And it's worth visiting, believe me. For Joe Camilleri and Samantha Rickert behind the scenes, I'm Carl Zymak. We'll see you on next month's Destination Downriver.
Thank you again to our sponsors, Martinson Family of Funeral Homes and Allegra Marketing, with a special thanks to our production partners here at the new Taylor Media Center. Thanks for listening and watching. Please visit our website, destinationdownriver.com, or our Facebook page, and be sure to join us for next month's podcast.